This is a Collider.com audio interview.
And maybe that you've answered this question with a lot of other people, but I'm curious if you could talk about your writing process. A lot of people, a lot of writers I've spoken with, have like a golden period where they'll write like when they wake up in the morning for 3-4 hours. They're very creative, and then like it sort of burns out and they do other things. For you, are you like the type that can write all day? Could you sort of describe your process?
You know, I always was an early morning or late night writer. That was, you know, early morning was my favorite. Late night was because, you know, you had a deadline. And at 4 a.m, you make up some of your most absurd jokes. I kind of feel like Cabin in the Woods is in a 4 a.m. movie, in the feeling that it has. But then once you have children, you write whenever the hell you can. You know, when they're napping, and then later on when they're at school, whenever, you know, when you're given the opportunity, you have to just sock into that zone. And there is no great time to write. There is only enough time to write. This movie, you know, Drew and I locked ourselves in the hotel for 3 days, and all time was the time to write. You know, we would break for dinner, but spend that just going over what we still had to do that day. We never talked about anything else. We really didn't talk about anything else. But because we were so locked into the vision of the thing, there wasn't a lot of like downtime. There wasn't a lot of pacing. We didn't even get tired. We didn't, we didn't go, let's gab about stuff. At any point, we just like, the fingers kept flying. I mean, I did a personal best on that one, which I think was 26 pages in a day.
Yeah, that's a number that most people will not achieve.
You know, honestly, I don't. I'm not looking to top it. It just and it came from, we had done a lot of prep on the thing, but it also came from our giddy joy at being able to write this. We didn't know if anybody was going to make it. We just were like, oh my God, this is our ids, our you know, like War of the Gargantuas. They're destroying Tokyo, and we're just having such a good time with it. And it, to me, it does. It feels like the entire movie, like, you know, how Tree of Life all had to be shot at magic hour and took forever. This feels like it was all written at 4 a.m. It's like, the aesthetic of the thing is the same. Those guys are not okay. They're very tired. That's some weird shit. That's a good feeling.
I don't want to obviously ruin anything for anyone. I post audio, so people will be listening to this. The characters that Richard Jenkins plays and Bradley Whitford, we don't have to talk about them, but I do want to talk about the fact that they're both great, and Bradley seems to really have your dialogue. He sort of understands it, you know? After seeing what they did in this, are you sort of like, yeah, they need to be in my next movie? They're just fantastic.
Actually, I did call Bradley when I was doing Lunch Day to see if he was available, and he wasn't. Many people weren't. You know, he's someone that, he's got a particular patois that is very, like, very much in our wheelhouse, and Bradley probably had the most improv stuff in the movie. I mean, he and Richard Jenkins were the guys that we wrote it for, and you know, being a giant West Wing head and knowing Bradley a little, it's he has an irreverence that matches me and Drew really, really well. He's an idiot, and we can totally write for that.
I understand. What is your favorite part of Comic-Con?
My favorite part of Comic-Con?
Yep.
The groupies. Man, they have loose morals, really. And it's men, women, I'm just saying that it gets weird on Sunday night. No, that's sadly rapid. My favorite part of Comic-Con is connecting with people. No, I will say my second favorite part is connecting with people that, you know, you just don't get to see any other place, because most of the artists I work with live in Brazil. Actually, most of them, a lot of Brazilians. You're never gonna, you know, there is no hub of the comic book industry anymore. It's so scattered because we can do everything digitally. So it's the chance I get to see people like Joe Chan and Fabio Moon, and connect with them while I'm seeing my idols, while I'm hanging with my friends that I came with. It's just, it's this great melting pot. But my absolute favorite part of Comic-Con is seeing, you know, a Mass Effect guy hanging with a Sailor Moon, and they're just, you know, they're having a great time, and nobody's like, you know, nerds, we love what we love with passion, and sometimes it's an angry passion. And, you know, to see that all sort of bleed out and everybody just connect. Everybody's like, your passion, my passion, equally valid, let's party. To me, that kind of connection, that's what I want in my work, that's what I want in my life, it's cool.
That I could do a whole segue into the Comic-Con documentary, but I won't. I will bring up the... I'm curious, what do you collect, if anything, and do you have any props from anything you've worked on in your home?
I'm just getting rid of my alien egg because it frightens my son. And with good reason. It frightens me now that I think of it. And he's never seen Alien, but I've got this, you know, horrific egg thing. It was a gift when we did Alien Resurrection, and it's down in the cellar, and he's just like, he mentioned to me that he was not comfortable with it. I was like, well, actually, you know what, I'll get rid of it. And
these things called storage units now.
Well, yes they do, and there are other places I could put it, but he said, you know, he's like, I know it's there, even when I don't see it. And I said, you know what, Arden, I'm going to get rid of it. And he was like, okay, but what if it's already hatched? Okay, but you know, I'm not a collector of things. I like Victorian children's novels extremely a lot. And that's sort of, if I would say I collect anything, that's what I sort of, I'll hunt for now and again at old bookstores and stuff. But I found myself, you know, and I love paintings, but I don't have expensive paintings. I cannot become attached to things. The accumulation of something for its own sake has never been in my DNA.
I
love comic books, but I love them because I want to read them.
I was going to say, for me, and a lot of people, I think when you're younger, you maybe collect a lot more, and as you get older, you realize, maybe I want to spend my money on my son, or on a car, or, right, you know, other things.
When I was a kid, I remember saying, I was like, I don't know, maybe 11, I was like, when I grow up, I want to have enough money to buy a really cool car, because I won't.
And there you go. I definitely want to ask you, you have a certain Marvel movie coming out, and you've answered so many questions. I've come up with a few that are not spoilers in any way, shape, or form.
Dive in.
So hopefully you can answer them. What is the soundtrack going to be like?
The Hulk dies. Oh, God. Oh, wow.
Right, exactly.
The soundtrack is going to be like Alan Silvestri kicking it out with the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road.
I was going to say, did you go after any specific songs by any...
Yeah, no, I figured that's what you were going to say, what you were saying, but no. There's not a lot of needle drops in The Avengers. It's very old school. I don't really actually tend towards the needle drop. To me, the moment becomes about the song, unless it's well used, and they often are. Or integrated brilliantly and perfectly, as in the case of Magnolia. But for me, it takes me out of a narrative. I score things in a very old school fashion, and which is, you know, why Alan was letter perfect for this movie, because he can give you that kind of heightened emotion, the Zimmer school of I'm just feeling a lot right now. But he can also be extraordinarily cue and character specific, which I love. I did try to get song. There is a song where when we see Tony Stark at his place, they said, well, he should be playing music. And I'm like, well, all this music you've played me doesn't work. I'll tell you exactly what we need. 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers by Jeff Beck. It's a cover of Stevie Wonder from Blow by Blow. It's going to be just the right amount of, smooth and romantic, and from his, you know, wheelhouse of the older rock and stuff. And they're like, yeah, that costs too much. I'm like, what? You have all the money? No? They found a good song, but I was like, I asked for one song. Just one.
Hey guys.
Hey.
You almost done?
Almost done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell Danny. You'll know.
I'm curious, what was the original, how long was your first cut, and how long is it right now?
My first cut was 3 hours long, and it's now down to 2:15. And I'm extremely proud of that. I had always intended, you know, to go over two, under 2.5. You know, it just, there was no way a movie with this many great actors and, you know, this much epic scope, you know, was gonna clock in under two and not feel a little anemic. Somebody wasn't gonna get their moment if that happened. But at the same time, I get very angry that, you know, romantic comedies run over 2 hours long. It's like, guys, that's not okay. You know, it's more isn't more. I don't want anything in the movie that shouldn't be. There are definitely things that it broke my heart to get rid of. An entire sort of ethos. There's a lot of me that got cut out. But I think part of the process in a situation like this is you make the movie, you make your movie, and then you remove yourself from that equation. At some point, you know, you stop looking beyond the Avengers movie at your own stuff. You don't look at that horizon. You look at this movie and you go, you know what? The Avengers are more important than I am, so these things that I'm obsessed with are not necessarily moving the story forward, and therefore they are baggage. You can do that in a TV show. You can bring your baggage and sort of lay it out because you have a season to do it. But in a movie, you actually have to remove yourself from the equation a bit. And when I was finally able to do that, you know, I saw a much clearer road to how to get the best experience for the audience.
Two quick little questions, and then I'm going to go. Do you expect it to maybe do an extended cut on Blu-ray that has like an extra 10, 20 minutes in it? Or
well, no, you know what? We'll have DVD extras. I, like Drew, believe very strongly in putting the director's cut into the theaters. I believe that the director's cut is the best movie for the studio and the best version of the movie for the audience. And I've never really been in a situation where I had to like pull the beating heart out of something I did. You know, I think people get to see a lot of extraordinary extras because I did shoot a bunch of stuff that I loved, but the movie is the movie I want it to be.
Last question. Easter eggs for fans. Are there a lot of Easter eggs, and are there any references to things you've done in the past, for example, Firefly, Buffy, anything like that, Dr. Horrible?
I am not a fan of referencing your own work when it's in a different universe than what you're doing. That to me is you know, is a wink at the audience, and winking isn't actually cool when you're not like 10. When I was 10, my girlfriend thought it was super cool that I could wink. Now it's just you're sad if you do that. There are a couple of mentions of things that you know, we were preserving the continuity, and I threw in one or two things, and I'm like, well, this is something one of them would say because it's part of the Marvel Universe, even if it's not a part of this movie necessarily. But I don't, you know, I had such a job just making the thing coherent that you know, I didn't have time to play a lot of games, and I'm not really a fan of that. I do think fanboys will see more, you know, in sure, certain bits than everybody else, but ultimately I want them all to have the same experience. And so.